Welcome to the 155 Election Podcast, interviews with candidates running for mayor, city council, and school board trustee in Hamilton, Ontario. Episode 131. John Paul Danko, you are running for re-election as city councilor in Ward 8. Welcome to the 155 Election Podcast.
Thank you.
Firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, outside of politics, I have lived in Hamilton my whole life, graduated from McMaster University, started working in Toronto, then moved to St. Catharines, never managed to leave Hamilton and put down roots here, and, you know, basically running to improve the community for families. And my kids are 14 and 16 now somehow, so they're both in high school, and it's really interesting raising teenagers, that's for sure.
Why are you running?
Well, I'm running for re-election, you know, really for the same reasons that I ran initially. And that's because I think I have some inherent skills that benefit the city of Hamilton. And when I look at my own family and where I see them ending up, I thought that a role on council would help to, make Hamilton grow into the type of city where families will want to stay to raise their own children. And also have those kinds of opportunities, jobs, and just to have a great, vibrant community, a place to live. Overall, that's my reason why I ran in the first place. And in terms of running for re-election, I think there's a lot of things that I've got started over the first term, and I'm really looking forward to seeing those through.
Do you live in Ward 8, yes or no?
Yes.
Does it matter if one lives in the community one seeks to represent?
Yes, it absolutely does matter. I think you need to have a connection to your neighborhood, to your ward, and you really can't do that if you don't live there.
How have you contributed to your community and our city?
Well, overall, serving the last 4 years on council is, they call it public service for a reason. It has been just a tremendously rewarding job, being in touch with the community, with neighborhoods, with various residents, and doing what we can to serve the needs of the community.
What are two of your priorities for Ward 8 and two of your priorities for Hamilton as a whole?
In the past term, we initiated the Ward 8 Complete Streets Survey, and that is a comprehensive review of traffic safety throughout the entire ward. We're just getting started on the implementation for that in neighborhoods, so I'm really proud of that work. And that's a priority to see that through in the next term. And then there's an extraordinary level of redevelopment coming in Ward 8, especially along the Upper James Corridor. And I think it takes a very effective councillor in order to guide how that development is going to proceed, and that will have an impact on Ward 8 for decades to come. For the city as a whole, I think the single biggest issue that we have in the city of Hamilton is an over-reliance on residential taxpayers. Our tax base is very heavily weighted to rely on residential property taxes, whereas in the past, when we had a very significant, you know, industrial core, we got much, much more income from commercial and industrial taxes. And because we rely on residential property taxes, it means that every time we're trying to improve services or do something better for the community, it impacts the residential property tax levy. And we really need to do everything that we can to attract new business, new jobs, new economic development for commercial, industrial, and institutional in order to grow that tax base that isn't relying on the residential taxpayer. Second thing for the city as a whole is related to the priorities for Ward 8, and that's growth management over the next 30 years. We took an extremely bold step this term of council by freezing the urban boundary, and now implementing that growth planning is going to be critical again. The decisions that this council made this term and that next council is going to make is going to set the physical form of our city for the next 30 years.
What are three skills you will bring to elected office that makes you the best choice to represent Ward 8 on Hamilton City Council?
I think the most important thing is the relationships that I've built with staff within the city of Hamilton. It's very important for me anyway to have a professional working relationship, and that takes time to do. Another skill that I bring to the table is related to my background as a professional civil engineer, where I'm able to really analyze complicated issues quickly and very solutions oriented. And then third is project management side that comes from being a professional engineer. And I found that that really helps with managing the workflow that a counselor is expected to have, whether that's in the office, working with constituents, at the council table as an executive for the City of Hamilton, and also keeping track of the day-to-day, everything that's going on. It really does take a very strong project management experience that's required in order to do that effectively.
The following preamble leads to questions regarding honesty and transparency. You were first elected in 2018. In the first few months of your term, you learned of various things that were not public during that election. One of them was the Coots Paradise cover-up. You initially voted for the cover-up a couple times, along with the other new councillors, before three of the four of you started voting against it. The Municipal Act prohibits members of council from releasing information the majority of council declares confidential. With all of this in mind, could you firstly explain your reasoning for originally voting in favor of keeping the Coots cover-up from the public, and then your general philosophy on what information should be confidential and what information should be made public?
I remember that time very clearly as a newly elected councillor, sitting in some of the very first meetings that we were in, being presented with information, and then having to make a decision on it. I wouldn't say that I ever voted for a cover-up or to keep anything confidential. Those meetings were in camera, and that's not necessarily what was on the table at that time. So one of the things as a professional engineer is all engineers take an oath to keep public safety as paramount. And we go so far as to wear an iron ring on the little finger of our working hand as a permanent reminder of that duty to the public. And that's something that I've found has served me very well as a city councilor, because it's a reminder that in whatever decision is before us, that it's always public safety that has to be paramount. And I've tried to use that to guide my positions on issues, not just Coots, but all kinds of issues that come before us. In the democratic system that we have, decisions that are made by majority vote. And if the majority of council decides that certain information should remain confidential, then, you know, I also have an oath of office and a duty to the Municipal Act, and I can't unilaterally release information unless it is by majority vote of council. So working within that system as a councillor and working in that democratic majority vote space, my job is, if there is something that I think should be public or should be released, then I advocate for that at the table.
The Red Hill Inquiry will issue its report early in the next term of council. The revelations regarding how City Hall ignored problems on the expressway and the toxic culture at City Hall, which silenced good people, are shocking. How do you plan to review and consider the final inquiry report when the commission releases its findings and recommendations?
I also remember those meetings very clearly, very early on in the term. At this point, I don't want to prejudge what the inquiry's decisions are going to be, whether they're going to find that there was, you know, shocking revelations or whatnot. I think my focus was and always is, how are we going to move forward from this? I'm not so interested in finding out who is to blame and pointing fingers or sending a scapegoat. My interest is finding out what happened so that it doesn't happen again. And what systems or policies do we need to put in place as a city to make sure that all of our projects moving forward don't run into any of the kind of issues that may have happened at Red Hill?
The construction of the B-Line LRT will begin during this term of council. It will be the largest construction project in Hamilton's recent history. How do you plan to respond to construction challenges and opportunities?
There's no question that construction of B-Line is going to be a major challenge for the city of Hamilton. I've been very supportive of B-Line Rapid Transit, and I'm really excited that now we can move on to talking about A-Line Rapid Transit on Upper James and James Street. But moving through the construction phase, it's going to take a very close coordination between the city and Metrolinx and as much proactive communication to the community as we can. Council doesn't have day-to-day kind of authority over construction staging or how that's going to roll out, but I'm sure we're definitely going to be involved as residents identify and bring problems to council. And we kind of liaison with the LRT office and Metrolinx. But a project of that magnitude and that scale is definitely going to have a massive impact for years. And I think it's really important that for us as a city that we keep our eye on the future and the reason why we're going through this pain during the construction phase to get to something that makes the city a much better place in the long term.
Before we turn to land use planning, let's have a lighter question. What is something interesting or unique within Ward 8 that you believe the rest of Hamilton should know about?
Well, one thing that I realized when I started riding the one wheel, the little electric skateboard, is just how close everything actually is. So when you get out of the car and you ride a bike or, you know, one of the electric scooter or whatever, things just kind of, the whole ward just kind of shrinks and everything becomes a whole lot closer. So for example, I can walk down to Relay for a waffle and it's like a 20-minute walk. It's actually really close. And we also have great connections through the Escarpment Stairs and the Bruce Trail. And once you start exploring those areas, you kind of realize that Hamilton is a much smaller city than you might have thought it was.
City Council decides land use planning and zoning. It decides where housing and businesses are located and the type of housing and businesses which are permitted in locations. There are two questions on this topic. The City of Hamilton is updating its outdated residential zoning bylaws. The zoning bylaws across Ward 8 are now decades old and do not conform with the provincial policy statement, Ontario's de facto planning law. With outdated zoning, the City of Hamilton is unable to present a principled planning position in front of the Ontario Land Tribunal. The new zoning, if compliant with the policy statement, will return local control over planning. What is your vision and how will you achieve it?
Certainly there is some areas of Ward 8 that still have the older zoning permissions in place, but I'd say a majority of the ward has been updated to the new zoning permissions 05200, especially along the main arterial corridors, Upper James, Mohawk, Fennel, Upper Wellington. All of those have already been updated to 05200 with zoning permissions that we've specifically thought about what we want the future of these areas to look like, and the zoning permissions to promote that are already in place for most of those areas. So part of the question about the outdated zoning permissions. So every once in a while, something comes up that is unexpected. So recently we had a daycare service provider that was unable to open her business because she was within 180 meters of another daycare service provider, which is a restriction in one of our outdated zoning bylaws. So that is something that every once in a while, one of these things comes up and we were able to go through a housekeeping amendment to remove that. But really the long-term solution is to get rid of that entire outdated zoning bylaw and bring it into the 05200, which doesn't have that restriction.
Large commercial plaza sites are converting into mixed-use mid-rise development. Already there are applications within Ward 8, many of them along Upper James. There is a new formal consultation for the Mountain Plaza site, which will see an expansion of the Walmart, the creation of a mid-rise self-storage, and mid-rise residential along Fennel. There are many similar lands across Ward 8. Presently, there is no city planning policy specific to commercial to mixed-use redevelopment. What is your vision for this type of redevelopment, and how will you achieve that vision?
That's a great question, and what we build now is going to be with us for the next 30, 50 years, so it's really important that we get it right. In a lot of ways, I see a lot of the low-density strip mall-type plazas like Mountain Plaza Mall and a lot of those plazas along the Upper James Corridor as they're really a blank canvas that we want good quality development to be built there. A lot of those properties are zoned for the type of development that we want. Most of it is C5 or C5A zoning, which allows for main floor commercial with up to 8 stories of residential above. So that's the type of development that we would like to see along the corridor. In terms of the Mountain Plaza Mall development, I've been very vocally opposed to self-storage as a use for that site and other sites in the city of Hamilton. I don't think that it's the right use for that area. I think as a city, we had over $2 billion worth of new development last year, and that's the type of development, you know, a self-storage facility that really doesn't bring any value to the community. We want development that neighbors and residents in the area can see that is a positive for their neighborhoods. We want to work with developers, but also be fairly clear of what our vision is for the redevelopment of these plazas. And that is a place for people, a place for families, and a place for commercial that ties everything together.
Road safety is a significant issue in Ward 8. Upper James is by far Hamilton's most dangerous street, with nearly every section of the road significantly more dangerous than average for both motorists and pedestrians. What is your plan to address safety on Upper James, and does your plan include unpopular but necessary changes? And if so, how do you plan to implement your vision?
There's definitely a lot going on Upper James. In many ways, it's the main street of the mountain. There are some very dangerous sections on Upper James. I think it has some of the top most dangerous intersections of Mohawk and Fennel, and also dangerous stretches all the way basically north of Stonechurch to Fennel. There's some sections that have much higher collision rates than other areas, so it is a top priority. We talked earlier about the Ward A Complete Streets review that is doing as much as we can to address traffic safety within neighborhoods. In total, when that's done, that's going to be about $1.85 million worth of traffic safety improvements for Ward 8. I think that's the biggest investment in neighborhood traffic safety in the history of the city of Hamilton. I'm very proud of that. But next term, I think what I'd like to focus on is our arterial roads. There's already work happening for Upper James. There's been reviews of the intersections, and staff are very aware of those dangerous sections. The next step is, okay, well, now what are we going to do about it? And as we talk about solutions, we also have to think about what the future of Upper James is going to look like and a transformation into a pedestrian, people-oriented complete street. And I've been working very hard on that this entire term. Things like when a developer is building even something like a fast food restaurant, making sure that there's entrances that are tied to the street, that there's thought given to the pedestrian zone. And all of those small decisions add up to make Upper James a much more pedestrian-oriented, vibrant roadway than it is now. It's extremely hostile to anybody that's not in a car as it is. Along with that, it is scheduled for rapid transit, A-line rapid transit. So as we're looking at the road corridor in terms of safety, we also have to think about how are we upgrading this corridor in order to build conventional transit capacity, and what is it going to look like when it is eventually part of A-line rapid transit.
Beyond Upper James, what is your overall plan to address road safety? Please provide three detailed specifics of your plan.
Well, again, we've already touched on that. The Ward 8 Complete Streets review is $1.85 million of dedicated neighborhood traffic safety improvements. We've already started phase one, $553,000 worth of neighborhood traffic safety interventions, mostly speed cushions at this point. Phase two was just approved, an additional $600,000, which will be implemented in 2023. And that'll include a lot more gateway features, curb bump outs, raised intersections, enhanced crosswalks, and that kind of thing. And the goal of doing the entire ward all at once is so that we could strategically put in traffic safety, traffic calming measures at locations that had an impact on entire neighborhoods. We didn't want to take a piecemeal approach. So traditionally, you know, somebody would call their counselor, say, I want a stop sign. And then the counselor would say, okay, yeah, you get a stop sign. And that's a very piecemeal approach. It doesn't lead to a comprehensive solution for the entire neighborhood, because what ends up happening is you bump those traffic issues to the street over. So by doing the entire ward all at the same time, we're doing our best to address those neighborhood concerns. By far, traffic safety has been the most consistent correspondence that I get from residents. And once we've implemented the recommendations from that report, then we're going to refocus on the arterial roadways, as I said. So solving the problems in the neighborhoods first, and then the arterials.
Turning to governance and expertise, let's use the idea that it takes 10,000 hours to master a skill or trade and apply it to being a municipal councillor. One person cannot be an expert in all matters which come before council for decision. How will you gain the necessary learning to be able to make informed decisions? What reading do you do? What professional development will you look for? And what types of people will you seek advice from?
Well, we spoke earlier about my background being a professional structural engineer and how that training really helps you to take very complicated information, break it down into much simpler steps, and then to understand the pieces that make up the whole. And I think that's been invaluable for me anyway as a municipal councillor, something I've really leaned on as long with as admitting the things that you don't know and seeking out answers if there's something that is outside of your sphere of knowledge. That starts with actually reading all the reports that come before us so that you're going into meetings prepared in advance and having an idea of where the discussion is going to go. Our professional staff at the City of Hamilton are extremely knowledgeable, so that's the first place that I look when I have questions or don't quite understand something. Our professional staff are always there to assist, but you have to have the confidence as a municipal councillor to ask those questions and admit that there's something that you might not know.
What are two changes you will propose to improve city services?
The first one is a much more focus on transparency, open by design. I think we've made some progress on that this term, but there's still definitely much more that needs to be done. And that's simple things like just putting reports out online, making things available in a format that's searchable, not in a PDF. It's kind of funny. When I try to find a motion that I put on the table, my system for finding it is I Google the topic, I find a newspaper article that was written about it, I find the date of the newspaper article, and then I know approximately the date of the meeting, and then I go back to the calendar and find the meeting, and then I find the motion on the agenda for that meeting. And that's just a completely ridiculous system. So obviously there's improvements that we can make for data management and having that kind of information available to the public so that it's just there and it's easy to find and everybody has that kind of stuff available. The other thing is on communication. I think as a municipality, we can do a better job being more proactive with our communications and public consultation. It's always difficult that when you have a big project or anything that's going on, trying to be as proactive as you can with communication, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. We try to be as proactive as we can and make sure that people are involved. But I think there's definitely more that we can do, especially around things like planning applications. We talked about the importance of land use planning and some of the major changes that are coming, especially to Ward 8. And I think we need to be much more proactive to let people know what's going on in their community so that they're not surprised when, you know, the bulldozers show up on site and then they say, well, I didn't know about this. A lot of times people just want to be involved and know what's happening in their community. And at the ward level, we do as much as we can with our weekly newsletter that we try to inform residents just kind of the, you know, the daily, you know, weekly what's going on. But from a city level, I think our communications and consultation outreach could be a bit more user-friendly.
What are two changes you will propose to improve quality of life in Hamilton?
The first one is making sure that all our communities are places that are family-friendly, that are inclusive to everyone, no matter what your background or ability. I've worked very hard on that this term. About half of the Ward 8 area rating funds that are available to me have been spent on community projects. So playgrounds, pathways, lighting, public safety improvements, sidewalks, that kind of thing, to help improve the quality of life for residents in every community. The second is making sure that we do everything we can as a municipality to provide opportunities for our residents to work here, to find a well-paying, rewarding job, and that the services that they need are in their own neighborhood. I think we're very fortunate in Ward 8 that we have some excellent opportunities for both employment. We have St. Joseph's and Mohawk College, major institutional employers. But I think as a community, one thing that we've really learned coming out of COVID is the importance of small business. And I think that's something that I'd like to focus on more as the ward counselor is how do we help entrepreneurs and small business and navigate what they need to do to get licensing and approvals from City Hall in order for them to be successful in the City of Hamilton.
It's 2026. The Public Record is writing a review of the four-year council term that is just ending. What three words do you hope we will use to describe your term on council, and what three words do you hope will describe council as a whole?
Well, overall, I hope council is described as being effective. For me, everything is always results-oriented, so I really hope that we're seen to be as an effective group, that we got the things done that needed to be done. I hope we're seen as professional, that we're able to work with each other, with our staff, with residents. And even though if there's issues that we disagree on, you know, we can have those debates, but that we always remain professional. and I'd say collaborative as a council. I hope that we're seeing that we're able to, again, you know, work with each other, but I think collaborate with our residents that we represent to deliver the results that they're looking for. Three words for myself. Again, my personal, how I try to approach my role as council is the same as what I expect for council as a whole. So they'd really be the same. Effective, professional, and collaborative.
We're going to go back 4 years and we're going to play the three words that you chose from 4 years ago and ask you how you feel about them now.
I really hope that people will see that I approach things with a thoughtful manner, that I'm smart about the positions that I take. I really hope that people understand that I have an open mind about things. The three words to describe council as a whole, I came up with collaborative, transparent, and consistent.
Well, that's really fun to hear, actually. I hope that I've lived up to how I describe myself. Consistent, maybe not. Transparent, it's funny that that ended up being kind of one of the main themes of this term of council, certainly. So I'm not sure that we lived up to that one. And collaborative, you know, overall, I think it's easy to point fingers at council and say, you know, we don't work together. You're always at each other's throats. But I would say in the COVID pandemic, we were very collaborative. And that's actually something I'm really proud of, that when we were faced with such a profound emergency, that as a council, we did come together to work together, to do everything that we could to address what was an unprecedented emergency for our city.
Thank you. That's the end of the prepared questions you were sent in advance. Do you have any closing remarks that you wish to share?
I really appreciate the discussion. I know it's a tremendous amount of work, but I think it's also really important for our democracy so that people understand who it is that's running and why they're running and what they stand for. So I really appreciate the discussion.
And how do people find out more about you and your platform?
It's votedanko@gmail.com if you'd like to email me, or jpdanko.com is our website.
This has been episode 131 of the Public Records, the 155 podcast. Thank you to the Hamilton Public Library for the use of their makerspaces to record these podcasts. Thank you to the readers and listeners of the Public Record for your support. You can visit thepublicrecord.ca to get more City Hall coverage, sign up for my City Hall newsletter, and become a member of the press club to keep me covering Hamilton City Hall. Thank you.